Hare Krishna. Yes, Prabhu.
Dhanavad Maharaj. We have a question from Ajita Krishna Prabhu.
Mm-hmm.
What causes the feeling of loneliness in our mundane world? Why does it come and go, this feeling? How is that feeling represented in reality, the original?
Well, you might think that, how many people are there in the world? 8 billion or
seven?
That wouldn't be a problem. So, loneliness, and we know from cities, and someone can feel very alone in a city with millions and millions of people, right? They can feel alone in the presence of someone whom they've, you know, dedicated their lives to one another. So it has something to do with a shared sensibility. Nearness in terms of heart, core consciousness. All perspective. I remember when I was leaving the Mott once and Srila Guru Maharaj in Navadvip, and it was customary to always, you know, see His Divine Grace. Upon leaving, he would take the garland of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, give us that, and sometimes His embrace. It's hard to believe now. We're so fortunate. But on one particular occasion, Srila Guru Maharaj, he said to me, in the presence of Srila Gurudev, he said, "So now our Goswami Maharaj is going to some remote corner of the world." And I thought, I'm going to California, you know, to Silicon Valley. And he said, "Now he's going to some remote corner of the world." And he saw the look on my face, you know, of perplexity, and very sweetly, very beautifully said, "This is your home, Navadvip Dham. If he says that, then I can believe it, aspire for that belief." I think this is your home. And for some time, you're going to some remote corner of the world in service to this plane. And one of the very last times that I was with him, and he knew, I knew this could be the last time I would be in His manifest presence, and I should say also that I made a choice to serve Him in separation. I would have preferred, from one point of view, to just spend His final days, I would be in His presence for His final days. But I realized that was not the service necessity. The service necessity was for me to go and extend His connection to others. But many times I lamented, I would like to be there with Him And he told me that two things come to mind. One was saying when Rupa Goswami, I'm only saying this because Guru Maharaj, the comparisons are odious, but how he chose to inspire me. So he said, Rupa Goswami wanted to be with Mahaprabhu, but Mahaprabhu told him, your service will be in Vrindavan. So by going to Vrindavan, following my order, which is for you to go to Vrindavan, then you'll get my association. You'll realize my association in the pursuance of this order. Just like so many times Srila Prabhupada said, in pursuance of the order of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he said, I'm always in the presence of my Guru Maharaj. And Srila Guru Maharaj would tell us that, you know, the faithful disciple is always living in his, in the relativity of his Gurudev. He's in that zone on account of the faithful connection and remembrance. So Mahaprabhu saying, in pursuance of my order, although from an objective point of view, it appears we're separating, but actually you'll realize my presence. And Guru Maharaj gave this example at the time. He said of the, association is achieved in terms of nearness of consciousness, not physical proximity. And he gave this example of bed bugs, otherwise known as lice. And so he said, when the bed bug is like embedded in your skin, it's not possible to be nearer. Right. Saying, but the consciousness of the bed bug and of the person, they're worlds apart. But the physical proximity couldn't be nearer, they're under your skin, as the saying goes, literally, not just metaphorically. But so physical proximity does not mean association or the cure for loneliness, right? The sense of being alone. But is that nearness in terms of consciousness? So even if there is a lack of physical nearness or proximity, being in the same zone of consciousness and aspiration and heart brings association. So it's ironic, and these great devotees who we see live in seclusion, right? There are so many examples of these great devotees who live in seclusion, right? But they're not lonely. It's just the opposite of that. Through divine remembrance, they have so much association. They're never feeling alone. They're feeling the presence of the great devotees, the predecessor acharyas, and not in some as a fantasy or some sort of nostalgia, but living, because right? As Guru Maharaj, again, would say, our guardians, are they real or not? Sometimes in speaking, you say, oh, perhaps our Guru Maharaj and your Guru Maharaj, they're looking down upon this transaction, happily approving. And we talk about prakat and aprakat. Manifest and unmanifest. Unmanifest doesn't mean nothing. This means not apparent in this plane, which is what? Temporary. So the apricot unmanifest is in the permanent, substantial plane. So really, someone who is substantially engaged in the culture of Krishna consciousness, by definition, could not feel lonely. Right? But although we may see from an external point of view that they're living in seclusion, isolation, or the so-called nirjan bhajan. Nirjan means, you know, without people. Nirjan bhajan, you know, with nobody around. Right? So, and that may be a relief. Like we hear of Lokanath Goswami, it's extreme, but the example is there that we're told having nothing, no other possessions than a lota, a water pot, and he kept his water pot turned upside down so that no one might say, hey, could I get a drink of water? Not that he's like a cruel person, but he's saying, like, he just realized the how easy it is to become distracted through mundane association. And mundane association in this context means something other than what is a service necessity. Because we're prepared to do all kinds of things for service. Pujala Ragapat Gaurava Bhange Matala Sarojana Vishayarange. Bishayarange. They may do all kinds of seemingly mundane things, if necessary, for service, and come in contact with so many. But so, alone, me in this context, it means without association. But what is real association is similar conscious culture. And by that we mean Krishna conscious. So, and then on the inverse, we can say, in this world, alienation may have its value, right? To not feel a part of mundane life and culture, it's not a bad thing. Right? And especially if as a result, it propels one toward spiritual association. So, people feel lonely because they feel that there is no one who appreciates them. But what is that self that is to be appreciated? So many times we heard Srila Guru Maharaj, Srila Gurudev express some appreciation towards the servitor self, which is the actual identity. So hearing that, that prospect, that possibility, and hearing appreciation from the higher section toward your servitor prospect is very inspiring. Whereas this layered self, buried under layers of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency, whether another person appreciates that or not, if they appreciate it, that's a problem, actually. they're appreciating something that is not real or substantial. So, and for the most part, I forget who it was, Virginia Woolf, maybe, saying about how others see us. What did he say about their eyes? You know, how we're imprisoned by how other people see us. I forget the exact quote. I think it's Virginia Woolf. So we would be shocked, at least minimally surprised, if we knew how other people actually see us. It would probably not match up with how we think we're seen. Because people are projecting upon others. Stereotypes based on, you know, the visual perceptions that have little or nothing to do with who that person actually is. And then even so far as in terms of relationships, we're not less, but people are even more, there's more projection involved. They're trying to project an ideal. An ideal they're carrying in their mind's eye upon another person, place or thing, but here we're talking person. I've mentioned that, you know, especially in the age of social media, right, where people are representing themselves in a particular way. And it's not uncommon for people to see some sort of disconnect between the way they were being represented and the way they are. Right? So they have some ideal, each person has an ideal way they think of representing themselves, and then other people are buying into that. The whole thing is basically, what is it called? Folie à deux, means shared madness in French. The folly of two, it means shared madness. That's what we should call it. We can give it a title. The shared madness of relationships by doctor. So the basis of, it's all algorithmic, computer-based ideal projection. Right? I mean, it would be humorous if it wasn't sad that people are trying to find their counterpart, in essence, another way of saying it, they're trying to find their soulmate or counterpart through mathematics, right? Through algorithmic remedies. Right? Someone's writing an algorithm to find who's appropriate, the counterpart, the soulmate, whatever. Is there another word? Other half, partner, life partner, etc. And there, you know, whether it's matchmaker.com or some version of that, right? Tinder, swipe left, swipe right. And there's so many fields that need to be, information needs to be entered. What we could call ideal search criteria, right? Or search criteria that should connect me with the ideal. Because we're carrying inside some, maybe it's nebulous, but some sense of that ideal person. How they would look, how they would behave, what their interest might be, so many things like that. Right? We think to the degree that they mirror ourselves, they're desirable, which is also interesting. Right? So, in a sense, a type of narcissism. Right? I wonder what Narcissus would do, you know, in the age of the selfie. Saying designed for Narcissus. You know the myth of Narcissus, in essence, someone who fell in love with their own reflection. Christopher Lash wrote a book called The Culture of Narcissism. And interestingly, he wrote that book in the 1970s. Right? That means 50 years ago, practically, right? The culture of narcissism. And this is, you know, 40, 50 years before social media and selfie culture. Right? So like Narcissus, falling in love with his own reflection. So that still, there's some sense of ideal search criteria that we're carrying in the heart. And then we're looking, in essence, for someone to impose that upon, right? Sort of force fit, right? Maybe a little bit to the left, to the right, they can be shaped, you know, and more or less just fit in there. We're so desperate to find the counter. And principle, it's telling. Right? And this telling meaning revealing, right? That we're hardwired to seek our counterpart. It's not necessarily a bad thing, right? But when we impose that ideal search criteria upon the person, places, things of this world, it inevitably, invariably, indubitably ends in disappointment, frustration, tending towards dissolution. So I like to suggest that the ideal should be equated with the absolute. When we say ideal search criteria, it's not just like a relative thing. I believe it's an absolute thing, is what I'm trying to say. Right. Like, and we're hardwired for this. As the great literary critic Alan Bloom had a work titled, Shakespeare Invented the Human. Right. And I should say, that's his hook to get you to read his book. He's not saying that literally, it's metaphorically, what's the word? In a literary sense. Same, because so many characters that we've come to know through him. Right? We may not, like when we hear, whether it's Shylock or Hamlet or King, these characters resonate with you. That's what he means to say. So like the personality palette, the palette of personality expands by hearing Shakespeare. I'm just using him as an example because he's maybe the best example, according to him. But that's what writers do. Right? The great pragmatist Richard Rorty saying, through literature, we become more empathetic with others who we may not, you know, in our small world or our orbit, we may not encounter these people, but through writing literature, we do. Right? So you have the so-called archetype. Right? So one of the archetypes that we've come to know through Shakespeare is Romeo and Juliet. Right? So, and what's interesting as a side point, it doesn't matter whether there was literally a boy named Romeo and a girl named Juliet, and they lived at a particular, it's totally irrelevant. It doesn't matter. Art is a lie that tells the truth. If you want to tell the truth, write fiction. What matters is that hearing this story, it resonates in the heart. We get it. That's what matters. That's how you know there is truth there. Truth is not something that needs to be objectively verified. Those are so-called facts. And I think it was Oscar Wilde said, you know, even facts can be proved. So truth is something else. And as the saying goes, art is a lie that tells the truth. So if there's truth there, whether it's literally, objectively, factual, is irrelevant. I've mentioned this in another regard that I find it interesting. The Bhagavad Gita that is praised, besides, we know devotees will appreciate Bhagavad Gita and aspiring devotees. Right, as Guru said, its connotation increases, denotation decreases. But as we go in the opposite direction, we know east, north, south, east, and west, people appreciate Bhagavad Gita. Not just devotees, but non-devotees, Mayavadis, you know, European scholars, everyone finds something of value in the Bhagavad Gita. And what I find interesting is no one questions the method of revelation. Why? On account of the overwhelming spiritual substance. And what I mean by that is to say, the method of revelation, Sanjaya is not there, right? There's the blind king Dhritarashtra and Sanjaya's, and he's saying, oh, tell me what's going on there. And then Sanjaya, he's telling. And what does he say in the end? The key is saying, Vyasa Prasadat Shrutavan. By the mercy of Vyas, I heard this. Right? So it's some mystical transmission. And the person who's delivering this, admittedly, is not literally, factually there. So why don't all these rational people who have some fondness for Bhagavad Gita, why don't they say, well, wait a minute, he wasn't even there. How do we know the validity of what's being said? How do they know? Because of the overwhelming substance in what is presented makes the method of delivery irrelevant. One great writer said about another, we needed nothing more than his authorial voice to grasp the truth of what he's saying. If we were to say that, they'd go, oh, come on. You know, that's not proof. But in the secular world, he's saying, he's such a great writer, we don't need to know anything, just the authorial voice of his, that's the proof of the validity, the value, the substance of what he's delivering. And I think that was a wonderful thing to say, a compliment of another. But I like to say similarly. So in consideration of the substance of Bhagavad Gita, the method of delivery is irrelevant. Right? Similar to to take it away from that field of resentment, to Romeo and Juliet. It doesn't matter whether it's factually, objectively occurred. And that's it. Because it resonates with the heart in such an overwhelming way that everybody gets it. Practically a child gets it, anybody and everybody gets it. That's why worldwide, across cultures, everyone knows this story and in varying degrees. And what is it about? This unconditional love, right? How committed are they to this unconditional love? They're willing to die for it. And that's what everyone likes about it. That's what they like. It's also noteworthy that they're 14 years old, which is not an accident. Shakespeare didn't select their ages just like whimsically. Why are they 14? Because that means if when you're 14, literally or metaphorically, you can believe in that love is everything and that you don't need anything but love to exist. And unfortunately, as the age goes up, the concept goes down. There was a cartoon in the New Yorker where the man's head is buried in the newspaper, and the caption is him answering a question asked by his wife, and the answer is, "What do you mean by love?" So you can understand his wife said something like, "Do you still love me?" And now he's at the point, without even lifting his head from the paper, saying, "Well, what do you mean by love? It has to be redefined in another way to be acknowledged." But we want to go back to Romeo and Juliet because this is pure unconditional love, the ideal, to the point that they're willing to die for one another, to live in the zone of that love. And so it's held up on a pedestal as like, you know, ideal, unconditional love. And that's actually what everyone is searching for. But they're trying to take that and impose that upon someone who cannot live up to that because, as I qualify the statement, saying ideal in this sense equals the absolute. But so that we'll say, oh, who can? Correct. But what about the absolute? Guru Maharaj would say that the absolute cannot be anything less than that. But that the absolute could not only be the ideal counterpart for one or for many, but for everyone. And simultaneously, then you say, well, who could conceive of such a person? Right? That is Krishna conception. Prati anga lagi kandi prati anga mor. We're told that comes from the lotus mouth of Srimati Radharani, that she's saying, anga, every limb, you know, part of me is crying out and hankering for you. And you can address every aspect of only you, nothing less than you. So she's set the standard. Right? Maybe she has the best idea. As Guru Maharaj said in another place, we should accept Radharani's suggestion. As though it's a suggestion. Prachodaya, prachodati, a suggestion. Okay. So the most qualified is saying, you are the only person who is capable of addressing every atom of my soul's hankering. But Guru Maharaj would add to that, every atom of every soul's hankering, and simultaneously, how wonderful and absolute is that? As the book was, you know, hidden treasure of the sweet absolute. No one, I don't think Hegel ever talked about the sweet absolute. I'm not familiar with the philosophers or the scientists using the word sweet when it comes to the ultimate reality. That the ultimate reality could be like sweet, loving, kind, affectionate, sensitive. Long walks on the Jamuna, on the banks of the Jamuna. So, Akhila Rasamrita Murti, that is Krishna. So the only way really to experience loneliness per se is to turn away from Krishna. Bhayam dityad binibeshitat syat ishad apetasya biparyayo smriti. We'll hear these terms, forgetful of our reality. But it, one me and you know, bahirmuk means turning away. Turn your face away. Which is a sad thing. So upon the return of Gopakumar, I mean, say return, that's a philosophical talk about that. But when Gopakumar, let's just say, when Gopakumar enters Goloka Vrindavan, right, what is in his deep heart's core, his swaroop, could not be addressed and even by Kunta or Dwaraka. There's something inside him that's compelling him to go deep, like Guru Maharaj said, dive deep in the reality, to dive deeper and deeper and deeper. And it's recognized by even Narada and Uddhava and Dwaraka. And they have a private meeting with him. And acknowledge that he will go further, deeper. But upon his arrival there, he's very eager to find the house of Nanda Maharaj. And he encounters various people. And you're thinking like Brahma Sahita, Katha Ganam, Natyagama, the place where all speech is song, all movement is dance. And the people, when he inquires, like, can you point me in the direction of the house of Nandamars? They're like, oh! And they're disturbed, upset, miserable. And he's thinking, what's wrong with these people? This is supposed to, he's just gone through all the different, what to speak of the different levels in the material world, all the zones of the spiritual world, and now he's entered the highest zone, and he's saying, in his estimation, these are the most miserable people that he's ever met. And he's been through all levels of material and spiritual existence. And saying, so at last, this is the destination, the most miserable people ever. So is Krishna consciousness, a lie, a misrepresentation of the truth, false advertising? Or something else is at play. And what he comes to understand, the source of the upset, of their misery, is that they're experiencing separation from Krishna. And from one point of view, it's a typical day in Vrindavan. What is the cause of the separation? That Krishna, Balaram, and the cowherd boys, they're cowherding in the forest of Vrindavan. We hear earlier that, or at different parts there, that when every day when Krishna is to leave, that it's like unbearably heartbreaking for Mother Yashoda. He gets to go, then they have to bring him back, and he's going. And it's not that he just like, you know, see you at lunchtime. She can't bear to allow him to go to the Vrindavan forest with Balaram and the cowherd boys and cowherd. It's deeply disturbing to her. And they run through this scene, and then finally somehow it occurs. And she's plunged in the depths of separation, where the most superior type of Krishna prema is mind. The heart yields that type of substance and separation. It's very peculiar. So they're also miserable because they're feeling separation from Krishna. Bahi Vishajalahoi Bhitare Anandamoy Krishna Premar Adbhuta Charit. It's mentioned in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita that the Adbhut, that means wonderful, astonishing, charit characteristic of Krishna Prem, of this quality, is that externally it's as if one has been poisoned, like suffering the effects of, you know, cobra venom. They're hemorrhaging. And simultaneously, internally, the heart is experiencing, in Guru Maharaj's words, some strange, peculiar type of joy. So it's like beauty and melancholy. And this is not something peripheral, anecdotal, auxiliary, secondary, but primary in the pastimes of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Right? As Srila Gurudev said quite simply, what is Mahaprabhu's tasting matter? Anadir Adir Govinda knows everything about the joys of union. Right? Lakshmi Sahasrashata Sambrahma Sevyamanam. One Krishna enjoying with innumerable Lakshmis. Right? Unlike Vaikuntha, one Lakshmi, one Narayan. Right? Innumerable Lakshmis, in this case, gopis, one Krishna. He knows everything about the joys of union. Mahaprabhu, Krishna did not take the position of Mahaprabhu to descend in this world to relish that. But what he did, as Gurudev said, he said, what is his tasting matter? That slok, Pidabir Navakalakuta Katuta Garvasya Nirvasano. What I just said before from Kaviraj Goswami, he's put in Bengali from on the basis of this expressed by Rupa Goswami. Same sort of thing. That what appears on the surface to be the most painful thing imaginable for someone who has Krishna Prem to be separated from Krishna, they will die. It's that. So if Romeo and Juliet, why we say, oh, it's so high, because they're willing to die for that. Here, and this is not the story of Romeo and Juliet. This is the reality of deep Krishna conception. Devotee who has Krishna Prem, to be separated from Krishna, they'll have to die. Their heart will burst. They will be unable to do that, to go on living. Right? So the 10th stage of separation is death. Why do they not die? Because they realize that will make Krishna unhappy. So they're caught. The feeling to die, but cannot, because it will, Krishna's first and everything, or gives unhappiness to him. So they're in that stage. So Guru Maharaj wrote in the Gadadhar Pranam, Nilam Bodhi Tate Sadasva Viraha Kepan Vitam Bandavam. As Bhaktivinoda Thakur compiled the Bhagavad Arka Marichi Mala. Think about this. Krishna Sva Damo Pagate Dharma Gyani Dibiksaha Kalo Nashtra Drishamesha Puran Arko Dunoditaha. And now that Krishna has his manifest pastimes, he's gone into the unmanifest plane, and the world's been plunged into the darkness of the Kali Yuga. Where will we get light? And says, this Bhagavad Purana has risen like the sun, illuminating all directions and this Kali Yuga, age of darkness. Right? But it says, Purana, like the sun. So if you take it, 18,000 slokas, like an 18,000 rayed sun. Right? But Bhaktivinoda Thakur, under the direct order of Srupa Damodar, is told, take 1,000 of these rays. Right? There's gradation everywhere and everything. So there are certain rays giving particular type of illumination of Krishna conception. You collect those and present that for everyone along the lines of Sambandha, Abhideya, Prayojan, Tattva. Right. Which he did. Bhagavat Arka, there's the word again, Arka, Puran Arko Dunodita, Bhagavat Arka, Marichi Mala. Right. Like a garland of these 1,000 rays extracted from the 18,000 rayed Bhagavat sun. Right. So, Srila Guru Maharaj, he got the inspiration to make a compilation of, say, like 300 slokas, approximately. But, you know, he playfully invoked Saraswati Thakur's teasing of him once. He's saying, but ease lover. So he didn't complete that. But what he did do was compose introductory slokas, one for Veda Vyas, this Gadadhar Pranam, different to, it gives us more than a hint of the selection criteria for the slokas. So this Gadadhar Pranam particularly As we know, Srinivasacharya was to learn the Bhagavatam from Gadadhar Pandit. If we can conceive of Gadadhar Pandit, Srimati Radharani in Gaur Lila, explaining the Bhagavatam, that and just that thought is inconceivable. And who is the audience for that class? Mahaprabhu himself, Nityananda Prabhu, all those great associates. They're there. Gadadhar Pandit is explaining the Bhagavatam. Yadamiya mahima sri bhagavatam katayam pratipatam anubhutam apyaladabideya tadakira rasa murti shamalila avalambam madura rasa di sri radha pada padmam prapadye. Of course, because the book ostensibly is about Krishna conception, of course it is. But it's telling you, the substantial Krishna conception comes from her. There's no better, superior, qualitative, quantitative Krishna conception than from the heart of Srimati Radharani. That's the Krishna that we're interested in. Her suggestion. Her way of seeing things. Gopi bhava rasamrita dilahari kalola magno muhura. And the supreme gopi bhav, mahabhav swarupini radha takurani. So how, of course, they want to hear from her, from him, Gadadhar Pandit, will explain the Bhagavatam. So, but Guru Maharaj says in this verse, that's, you could say they're having the class, general class, but then sometimes on the shore of the broad blue ocean is just Gauranga Mahaprabhu and Gadadhar Pandit. And the time has come. Nilam Bodhi Tate Sadasva Viraha Kepan Vidham Bandavam. The whole purpose of Mahaprabhu's descent is to taste this, to experience what she is experiencing, to explore the depths of her heart, Radha Bhava Duti Subalita. And there, most inconceivable of inconceivable things, is Krishna enveloped in the heart and halo of Radharani, experiencing what? Svaviraha. The most intense sort of separation from himself, but as her, the way she experiences separation from Krishna. So she knows what that is like. Two personalities are best suited. Yes. Swarup Damodar, and of course, Gadadhar Pandit. That goes without saying. Swarup Damodar, Lalita Sakhi, who renders similar service to Srimati Radharani in Goloka Vrindavan, Gokula Vrindavan. But here, so Gadadhar Pandit, seeing what Mahaprabhu is experiencing, the painfulness of that separation. And Guru Maharaj said, hey, Bandhavam, it's the best friends, right? So it's really Radha and Krishna, but here Krishna is Mahaprabhu, enveloped in the heart and halo of Radharani, and there's Radharani. Knowing that now he's experiencing what I experience. And I know how to help. Right. Srimad Bhagavati Katha Madiraya Sanjeevayam Bhatya. Is that the stage of death-like, on the verge. And Guru Maharaj's explaining his own sloka said along these, because madira, that means in the wine, intoxication, saying, just when a friend sees a beloved friend is suffering such heartache on account of separation from their beloved, they offer them some intoxicant to bring some relief to their heart from the anguish of separation. Right? And what is that in this case? Srimad Bhagavati Katha Madhiraya, the Bhagavatam slokas. Which ones? Certain slokas from the Bhagavatam. Remember, this is Guru Maharaj's introduction to a selection criteria. Srimad Bhagavatam Katha, Srimad Bhagavatam Katha, Swanayanasu Payanai Pujayan. And as Gadadhar Pandit is selecting these Bhagavatam slokas to assuage the anguish of separation in the heart of Mahaprabhu, the tears are streaming from his eyes like lotus tear offerings onto the pages of that Bhagavatam. And what are they doing in the process? They're washing away those verses, those slokas. As if in one sense that they can't be seen. When Srinivasacharya approaches for instruction, Gadadhar Pandit saying, what I want to teach you, my tears have washed those slokas from the pages of the Bhagavatam. You'll have to get a new one. And he goes to Navadvip. It takes, in those days, I don't know, a couple of months or to make a new book. It comes back and Gadadhar Pandit has left the world. So it's very mysterious, as if not to push that zone. At a certain time, when it is appropriate, revealed, expressed, but like even to Srinivasacharya, Ganadhara Pandit's tears washed away the slokas. And so Guru is saying, Sri Goswami Gadadhara Prabhur Bhuyat Madeka Gati. Let this work be an offering to that best of Goswamis, Gadadhar Pandit. So that's what Mahaprabhu came to taste. Right? So it contradicts, Krishna consciousness will always contradict the stereotype or contradict the stereotype of what we might expect. So in that plane when Gopa Kumar is saying, now you're in the world where all movement is dance, all speech is song, happy, happy, happy all the time, and everyone's so miserable. Saying, or the root cause of this misery is separation from Krishna and it's producing some peculiar internal ecstatic joy. He's entered that domain. And while this is going on, he's having this realization, then we're told, what's coming? Like, and it's the way of revelation of Krishna conception. First, what do they see? It's just like a giant dust cloud. Right? Except it's Gauraja, the dust from the hooves of the Krishna's cows, create this big dust storm, and they think, but you can hear like feeling there's some sound, some flute singing down, and it's moving in this direction, and then everyone there, all those who were so miserable, they're now riveted to looking in that direction, and the happy dust cloud of Gauraja and Krishna Bhaja is moving towards them. And then they're starting to see some individual shapes and forms. And then they see dancing cowherd boys singing, playing flutes. The cows are coming. And then Krishna and Balaram. And now everyone's being brought back from the dead. And it's a typical day in Vrindavan. So Vaikuntha is supposed to be without anxiety. It's the southern hemisphere of the spiritual world. Goloka Vrindavan is filled with anxiety. But it's sweet type of anxiety. Nectar producing anxiety. Why Yashoda abandons Krishna to prevent the milk from boiling over. How can you push Swayam Bhagavan away to go and attend to the milk? Which is more important? That's in service to him. It always contradicts the stereotype. And we're told then Gopa, Kumar, and Krishna see each other. And if we can think how happy Krishna must be that his devotee, who Radharani says in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, is one of hers, is now before him. And Krishna's running, Gopakumar's running, and they embrace, and what happens? Krishna faints. And then what happens is everyone is saying, like, who is this person? He just got there. You think everything's going to be bad. They're already thinking, like, how to get rid of him. Look at the effect he had on Krishna. Maybe it's one of those demons who they come in the disguise of a cowherd boy. Does anyone know him? Can anyone vouch for this cowherd boy? Balaram. But Krishna is so overwhelmed at the entrance of this devotee that he faints in happiness. And when he comes to, he says lovingly, affectionately, how could you stay away from me for so long? Said, but when I knew in this lifetime you would be coming back to me, you cannot imagine the eagerness and anticipation in my heart. And now you're here. Let's go to Nanda Bhavan for dinner. So that's the actual world. An eternal play. If by the grace of Guru and Vaishnava, Sadhu Shastra Guru and Vaishnava, we can have some remembrance of that plane, you'll never feel alone. You'll be overwhelmed by joyous connection of Krishna-loving people. So even those recluse Nirjan Ananda Babaji, that's the world that they're in. They're not meditating on something abstract. My Guru said, Dimahi, Di, Buddhi, what does it mean? Seva. Right? Seva Mayoyam Loka. The world that's full of seva, it's seva saturated. So although lost to this world, they're internally serving in that, in the seva mayoyam loka. So we seek the association and service of such Vaishnavas and their servants. Servants, servants. Hare Krishna.